Today is Tuesday, the 31st of March, and this is the World Socialist Website. As ground troops arrive in the Middle East, Trump threatens obliteration of Iran's infrastructure. By Andre Damon. On Monday, the 30th day of the US-Israeli war against Iran, US President Donald Trump threatened to destroy all of Iran's energy generation and water desalination plants unless it surrenders to his demands. Quote, "If for any reason a deal is not shortly reached," Trump posted on his Truth Social platform, "we will conclude our lovely stay in Iran by blowing up and completely obliterating all of their electric generation plants, oil wells, and Karg Island, and possibly all desalination plants." End quote. Destroying all of Iran's power plants would uproot the basis of civilized life in the country, cutting off water treatment, hospitals, and food refrigeration. And the destruction of its water desalination plants would deepen the already catastrophic water crisis in Iran, which is facing the worst drought in its modern history. What Trump is threatening is a war crime, the latest in a war full of them. Article 54 of the 1977 Additional Protocol 1 to the Geneva Conventions states, quote, "It is prohibited to attack, destroy, remove, or render useless objects indispensable to the survival of the civilian population, such as foodstuffs, agricultural areas for the production of foodstuffs, crops, livestock, drinking water installations," end quote. Trump's threats constitute collective punishment, one of the oldest prohibitions in the laws of war. It is the Gaza model applied to a country of 90 million, the systematic destruction of the infrastructure necessary to sustain human life. The criminality of the Trump regime is so naked that even the media has been compelled to take note. When NBC's Garrett Haack asked White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt why the president was, quote, "threatening what would amount to potentially a war crime," end quote, she did not deny it. She replied that the U.S. Armed Forces, quote, "has capabilities beyond their wildest imagination, and the president is not afraid to use them," end quote. The New York Times published an opinion piece Monday, headlined, quote, "Is Trump threatening to commit a war crime?" end quote. It admitted that Trump's threat, quote, "would almost certainly amount to a war crime. One of the central tenets of the laws that govern modern conflict is that the targeting of civilians is off-limits in military campaigns," end quote. This is true, but the entire war is criminal and illegal. The Nuremberg Tribunal defined the initiation of a war of aggression as, quote, "the supreme international crime, differing only from other war crimes in that it contains within itself the accumulated evil of the whole," end quote. This is precisely what the US-Israeli war on Iran is. The systematic assassination of Iran's political and military leadership, from Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei to dozens of senior officials, violates the prohibition on assassination under Executive Order 12333 and the laws of armed conflict prohibiting perfidy and treacherous killing. The bombing of a girls' school in Minab that killed more than 170 people, most of them children, the destruction of 61,000 homes and 500 schools, the killing of more than 6,500 people. Every act flows from the original crime of launching this war. There is a logic to the increasingly genocidal rhetoric coming out of the White House. The Trump administration, having hoped to overthrow the Iranian government by assassinating its leaders, has failed to achieve its objectives and must either escalate US involvement in the war or face a catastrophic defeat. Trump called it an excursion and said it would be over in days. A month later, thousands are dead, but Iran's government remains intact, The Strait of Hormuz remains closed, and oil prices have surged 59%. The administration is turning to the Gaza model, the total destruction of a society as a method of war. In Gaza, Israel has killed more than 72,000 people, displaced the entire population of 2.3 million, destroyed every hospital and university, and reduced the territory to rubble. Trump is threatening similar methods to a country 40 times the size of Gaza. US troops are flooding into the Middle East. Thousands of paratroopers from the 82nd Airborne Division have arrived in the region. Two Marine Expeditionary Units have been dispatched to the Persian Gulf. The Washington Post reported the Pentagon is preparing for weeks of ground operations and drawing up plans for 10,000 additional troops. The Wall Street Journal reported that Trump is planning a military operation to seize nearly 1,000 pounds of enriched uranium from underground facilities deep inside Iranian territory. The Trump administration operates outside all legal and constitutional restraint. It is a criminal underworld in power, speaking the language of gangsterism on a global scale. Trump told the Financial Times on Sunday that his preference is to, quote, take the oil in Iran, resurrecting the colonial premise that a great power can invade, destroy, and then claim ownership over a nation's resources. A ground invasion of Iran, a country of 90 million, with a large military, rugged terrain, and the capacity to inflict serious casualties, will not produce a swift victory. When the invasion bogs down, when casualties mount, when the political crisis deepens, what will be Trump's next move? As White House officials are so fond of saying, quote, nothing is off the table, end quote. Mohammad Safar, who served 12 years as a permanent representative of the Patriotic Vision Association to the United Nations, resigned this week, warning that the US is, quote, preparing for possible nuclear weapon use in Iran, end quote. The administration has staked the credibility of American imperialism on this war. A defeat would call into question the capacity of the United States to project power against Russia and China, the central strategic preoccupation of both parties. Trump's threat to unleash fire and fury on Iran should, in fact, be taken as a threat to use nuclear weapons. Trump's threat came the same weekend an estimated 8 million people marched in the largest single-day protest in American history. 62% of Americans strongly oppose sending ground troops to Iran. No war in American history has been so unpopular at its outset. The Democratic Party, which before Trump's election had been waging war in the Middle East for over a year, is seeking to divert and neuter this mass popular opposition to the war. At the No Kings rallies, Democratic politicians either ignored the war or reduced it to a passing phrase. In Boston, Senator Elizabeth Warren did not mention Iran at all. No kings today and we vote in November, as AFT President Randy Weingarten put it. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison told the crowd to, quote, vote for people who don't start wars, end quote. Ellison was telling attendees to vote for the Democrats. But the experience of the Biden administration, together with every other Democratic presidency before it, shows that this is a completely bankrupt perspective. Biden provoked the Russian invasion of Ukraine and then massively escalated the war. He armed Israel's genocide in Gaza, which was intended from the beginning as a prelude to war against Iran. The claim that the crisis will be resolved by electing Democrats in November is a fraud. And what will happen between now and then? The real significance of this focus is to buy time, to give Trump the months he needs to prosecute the war that the Democrats support in its fundamentals. Trump does not speak and act simply as an individual madman. He is a political personification of a capitalist oligarchy, an American ruling class that has broken with democratic restraints and turns to war abroad and repression at home to defend its wealth and global interests. The war will not be ended through a vote for the warmongering Democratic Party, but through the independent mobilisation of the working class. Already the war has been a disaster for working people, who are confronted with a massive surge in the cost of living. As the war drags on, the costs will only intensify, together with demands to slash social programs to pay for war. Trump has called for a $1.5 trillion defense budget. Where will this money come from? Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are already under assault. The social programs built over the past century will be gutted to feed the war machine. The working class is the only social force capable of stopping this war. 8 million people took to the streets, but that opposition will be strangled if it remains under the control of the Democratic Party. The fight against war requires an independent movement of the working class, organised in rank-and-file committees in every workplace and linked across industries and borders, armed with a socialist program against the capitalist system that produces war, dictatorship, and social inequality. Over to you, Carol.
Palestinian activist Nadine Kiswani and her attorney speak out on Zionist assassination plot, Patrick Martin, March 30, 2026. Palestinian activist Nadine Kiswani addressed a news conference Monday morning in front of New York City Hall to denounce a Zionist-instigated assassination plot that was disrupted last week by the arrest of 26-year-old New Jersey resident Alexander Heifler in a joint FBI New York Police Department operation. Three of Kiswani's civil rights attorneys and several other political activists joined her at the press conference, which was covered by a number of local media outlets and drew a supportive crowd. Kiswani pointed to the activists supporting her and said, quote, "I'd just like to point out that the largest demographic of supporters that we have today actually came from Muslim women and from Jewish communities who are standing unequivocally against this attack on me." End of quote. She added, quote, "Today I am standing here not just as an organizer, but as a mother, as a Palestinian, and as someone who was a target of a Zionist assassination plot that I have been warning has been inevitable for far too long. When I learned that someone was preparing to attack my home, building explosives with the intention of taking my life, I was not just processing that as a public figure. I was processing that as a mother, holding my infant, thinking what it means for someone to target my home, where my child sleeps, where my family is supposed to be safe." End of quote. Kiswani explained that Zionist organizations like the Jewish Defense League, the JDL, and the fascist Bitar organization has waged a coordinated campaign of harassment, threats, stalking, doxing, and placing bounties on her head because of her role as a leader of Within Our Lifetime, which campaigns aggressively in defense of the Palestinian people. She pointed to the history of Zionist extremist violence in the United States, including the 1985 murder of Palestinian-American civil rights leader Alex O'Day, who was killed by a bomb at his office. "The killers escaped to Israel and were never held accountable." Kiswani said that Heifler intended to do the same, carry out a terrorist attack, and then seek sanctuary in Israel. Other attacks include the 2023 murder of 6-year-old Wadi al-Fayoumi outside Chicago, and the shooting of 3 Palestinian college students in Vermont simply because they were wearing keffiyehs. Quote, "It's a pattern where Palestinians are dehumanized," Kiswani explained, "where our lives are treated as less valuable, where violence against us is incited, justified, and ignored. So when we talk about Zionism, we have to be honest about who we're talking about. We're talking about a political ideology that in its practice has been used to justify the dispossession, dehumanization, and killing of Palestinians." End of quote. In comments to the WSWS after the press conference, Kiswani said, quote, "They are trying to suppress anti-genocide, anti-war, pro-Palestinian, pro-freedom advocates by whatever means they can, and are resorting to violence." The more, quote, they try to silence us, the louder we will be, Kiswani added. I am not going to give them this win by going into hiding and not speaking out about Palestine anymore. Eric Lee and Christopher Godsall Bennett, whose law firm represents Kiswani, both addressed the press conference. Lee drew the connection between the planned violence in New York City and the ongoing violence in the Middle East. Referring to the would-be assassin, Lee said, quote, his aim of silencing a Palestinian activist and murdering her young child mimics the official policy of Israel, where he planned to escape for protection. His method, that of a firebombing in the dark of night, is the method of the Ku Klux Klan, end of quote. An organized group of Zionists was involved in the preparation of the attack, he said. They have group chats. They had a safe house. They had access to financial resources. Serious and credible death threats have continued against Ms. Kiswani in the days since the arrest, end of quote. Lee said the assassination attempt came just a month after Kiswani filed a federal civil rights lawsuit against Betar and its New York-based leadership, naming, among others, Ron Torossian of 5W Public Relations in Midtown, Ross Glick, Yoni Kietzel, and John Mantell, along with the group's board of directors. The suit was brought under the Ku Klux Klan Enforcement Act of 1871, which prohibits private individuals from conspiring to deprive people of their rights. Lee said Betar had spent more than a year targeting Kiswani, stalking and harassing her, issuing threats and attempting to terrorize her with, quote, BIPA intimidation, meant to evoke Israel's use of explosive devices in Lebanon. He added that the group had repeatedly encouraged others to attack her and had offered a cash, quote, bounty of $1,800 to anyone who would assault her. Betar, Lee said, quote, has urged the Trump administration to strip her of her United States citizenship and has confirmed that it met with the Trump administration in Washington to discuss Ms. Kiswani's case, end of quote. Lee raised the question, quote, what were the Trump administration's contacts with Betar and with the network that has been plotting against Ms. Kiswani for over a year, end of quote. Lee argued that the broader political climate, marked by official indifference to and even celebration of the assassination of Renee Good and Alex Pretty in Minneapolis, encouraged violent attacks by signalling that they would be tolerated. And so the attack on Ms. Kiswani is no accident, Lee concluded. It's not the product of bad apples. It's the deliberate and intended product of a political strategy by the Trump administration to cultivate extra-legal parliamentary militia forces to murder its opponents and suppress dissent in the aim of establishing a dictatorship in this country. We will do everything that we can in the courts to expose the right-wing conspiracy, but ultimately the fight against dictatorship and right-wing terror is not going to be led from within the American state apparatus. It's going to come from the population of this country, which is furious at what this government is doing, which is furious at what this terrorist network has done to our client. And here, as we prepare to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence and the revolution that gave birth to this country, we encourage the people of this country to understand that the responsibility of defending our client and whatever remains of democracy falls on you, the people. End of quote. Christopher Godshall Bennett, Lee's law partner, detailed his deep personal connection to the case, growing up in New York City and choosing to reject Zionism, founding the first anti-Zionist Jewish organization at Columbia University, the Columbia Barnard chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace. Godshall Bennett said, quote, I find myself back in New York 12 years later to witness the results of a decade of tireless advocacy led by people like Nadine Kiswani. I see a city transformed into a center of solidarity with the Palestinian people and of opposition to Zionist supremacy. That victory is precisely why these Zionists have targeted Nadine. They are deeply afraid. They have lost their stranglehold on public opinion and have fallen back on their original strategy, straight-up murder. Organizations like the Jewish Defense League and Betar, both created in the image of founding Zionists, reflect the dark reality of Zionism, a twisted vision of Jewish life and community, safety through violence, peace through war, life through death. While we work to hold those accountable who are responsible for this attack, I urge you to see them for what they are, not fringe elements acting alone, but the very center of Zionism itself. There are those who will say that to do so is anti-Semitic, but that is a lie. The real anti-Semitism is that at the heart of Zionism and in the founding documents of organizations like Betar. If you want to stand against anti-Semitism, stand with the Palestinian people and with Nadine. Reject the movement that murders children and then uses Jews around the world as an ideological human shield to evade accountability. End of quote. Jonathan Abadi, another attorney for Kiswani, said, quote, "It is an honor and a privilege to represent her because she's a person of conscience. She's a person of tremendous bravery and courage and conviction, and what brings us here today is cause for great sadness and great outrage." End of quote. He said that Kiswani and her supporters were demanding that the authorities, quote, "thoroughly and vigorously investigate and find the people who are responsible for this, to charge them, to arrest them, and to prosecute them, all of them, not just some of them," end of quote. Other speakers included Marwa Janini, executive director of the Arab American Association of New York, Imani Al-Katabkur, founder of Muslim Girl, a widely followed social media platform, Dania Darwish, founder and executive director of the Asha Women's Center, which assists victims of Islamophobia, and Morgan Basikas, a member of Jewish Voice for Peace in New York City. All of them noted the rise of anti-Muslim, anti-Arab, and anti-Palestinian attacks fueled by Islamophobic statements by government officials in Congress and the Trump administration. Basikas declared, quote, "We reject Zionism because we reject all forms of racism and white supremacy and colonialism. We reject any attempt to conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, which we recognize as a cynical racist strategy to smear Palestinian activists such as Nadine and clearly endanger their lives." End of quote. Kiswani and her attorneys took a series of questions from the press after the opening round of statements. She explained, quote, "I have been going to bed every night worried about my child, worried about my family, my husband, my family, my siblings, my parents are always making sure that I don't have to go anywhere alone. I share my location with all of them in case anything happens, and that was all before the assassination plot. So for this to happen, it just, you know, it confirms our fears, it validates them, especially because the threats haven't stopped." End of quote. The attorneys explained that the next action would be a hearing in the Southern District of New York on April the 14th on the lawsuit against Betar brought under the Anti-KKK Act.
For these articles and more, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Jenny Campbell and Carol Diviak.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.